So welcome back to part two of this week four homework for the graduate program for June. And we have six more to go through. So whenever you're ready, Maggie, if you'd like to read the first one.
I'm writing to you for that reminder of a heartfelt connection and ever grateful for the anchor that you provide, especially when things get rough. I'm working on self-compassion and finding the best way is to use any pains and abrasions that arise as a nudge to bathe in awareness. Any attempts to fix things in the world always seem unsatisfactory and clumsy. What I'm finding is an increasing issue around sleep. It seems to be a given that I wake up at 2:11 a.m. with a myriad of thoughts racing through my brain and a barrage of emotions to go with it. This is definitely amped up from my usual sleep issues, and I find it hard to stay in awareness. After 3 hours of this, I'm able to get back to sleep again if I permit, but tired in the mornings. Any advice on how to address this, please? With much appreciation for all that you are.
Thank you, and good to hear from you. And I know you're working hard on your compassion for yourself. Well, not working hard, but consistently is perhaps a better word. And you're doing amazing. And I'm glad you reached out. And that, you know, it's something that we have spoken about. So I would like to say that the tiredness, if we are excessively tired, has less to do with how much sleep we had and more to do with how much we are identifying as a separate being in any particular moment. So these 2, 3, 4 a.m. Satsangs that we've joked about used to happen for me every night, and I would wake up exhausted, fall asleep again half an hour maybe before the alarm was supposed to go off, and sleeping very peacefully as the alarm went off, and feeling very, very tired until I really, really questioned it. And I began to see that actually my body has had as much sleep as it needs. It's only my mind that is arguing with that fact. And if I identify as a separate being who needs sleep, then I'm going to really be sort of hemorrhaging energy in that way. I'm going to be really struggling with getting enough energy, getting enough sense of well-being throughout the day, contentment and all of that. So, of course, the body needs some sleep. The body will always need some sleep. But actually, as your awakening deepens, and especially as you begin to really exhibit compassion and love for yourself that you've been working on, that need for sleep will diminish. Just be careful if you can not to identify as the body here that needs, the body needs food, water, sleep, oxygen, you know, other things like that. But we quite often still hold on to identification with it here. I need sleep. I didn't get enough sleep. I need X amount of hours per night and I didn't get it. And really, you don't sleep at all. You watch as the body sleeps and then wakes, and really the self, the noumenon that you are, takes some time off during the night time when the body lays down from looking through the senses, and we call that sleep. It's really something quite different though. It's when you're really not interested in the sense perception for that time. So I would just question that. Are you still feeling that you need sleep? Because it's a common way that we identify. For me, there was a whole set of beliefs that I need to sleep, I need to exercise, I need to eat less, I need to lose weight. All of these were where I was still identifying as the body, as a separate being. And all of those were reflections of how I was feeling about myself. So just checking in with that and continuing to be as kind as you can to yourself. It will ease. If you're awake during the nighttime, what I used to do is if I couldn't just relax into it. Sometimes I could, sometimes I couldn't. I'd just get up and do something, or I'd watch something, or I'd read a book, or until I felt sleepy again, and then I'd go back to sleep. Pretty much the worst thing we can do is just lie there going, I should be asleep, I should be asleep, I should be able to fall asleep. And if you can't get back to sleep in that moment, you can't get back to sleep. Just noticing that we can accept that. I'm awake right now. And where is it written that I shouldn't be awake at 3 a.m.? Of course, our mind has a lot of ideas about that. Well, of course you shouldn't be awake at 3 a.m. because you'll be tired the next day. And here goes the identification again. But just asserting that my body will sleep as much as it needs to. And while during this process, the pattern of sleeping may be disrupted to some degree, broken or intermittent. And recognizing that you don't need any sleep at all. I think you'll find something will shift there. You'll just relax. If I'm awake, I'm awake. So be it. I'll either use that time usefully or I'll just watch. If you're identifying with the mind in that time, if there's a lot of thought activity, then so be it. Who's to say it should be otherwise? As soon as you can, you bring your attention back to the noumenon. And if you can't do that for 3 hours until you fall asleep again, so be it. I would find that after 2 hours or 2.5 hours, I'd finally be able to bring attention back to the noumenon, and that would be when I fell asleep because my body just relaxed. But was it really that my attention was back on the real self? Or was it that I'd stopped trying in that moment, stopped shoulding and shouldn'ting myself in that moment? So the body just went, ah, oh, next thing I know, the alarm's going off. So hope that helps, and really good to hear from you, and keep going. You're doing excellent work, and look forward to hearing how it progresses. Okay.
Before anything, I want to thank you again for this past satsang intensive. It was quite clear and evident the deepening of the awakening. Yesterday, there was this challenge at work with a peer that seemed to be jealous of the information that he manages and his mathematical financial models and algorithms. And the mind was telling me all sorts of things and do this and do that, and went on and on. And even the body was somewhat uptight, and it seemed that I was suffering. It also felt that I was putting an effort into not believing the mind. And by night, the issue came in an unexpected way to surface with our boss and resolved nicely. This morning, as I was meditating on this month's question, one question popped up. Am I in time and space? Thank you for your guidance and willingness to wake us up.
So, again, good to hear from you. And just to notice that there's certain areas of our life where we find it perhaps much easier not to identify with any thoughts. And there's certain areas where we're still quite identified with thoughts. And then there's areas where we can see that these thoughts aren't true, but we might feel we have to be a little bit more vigilant or maybe put some effort into that, a remembrance. Not sort of hard work effort, but remembering this isn't true, I've seen this isn't true, or remembering to question the idea if it's with contemplation, if it's true. So here's an area of your life where there's still a little tendency to identify, and it's okay, isn't it? You're coming out of it here, you're seeing it clearer. There will be times when you're kind of obviously coming from the noumenon where everything's just fine, it's flowing, my life is just fine. And then you might feel that stickiness come back where you've kind of picked up some thought, but you're aware you've picked it up and you're just watching. Maybe you can't quite 100% put it down yet, and maybe there's just a little more questioning needed. And as you said, that question, am I in time and space? It's a powerful one, isn't it? That just to notice sometimes the answer to that question will seem, yes, I am. Here I am struggling with the mind again. And sometimes the answer will be very clear, no, I'm not. Those are happening inside me. Time and space are happening inside me. And if you can just give yourself a break, as we've been saying, pretty much the whole theme of this week's feedback is that everyone is being very, very hard on themselves, as we tend to do as human beings. I know you're relaxing and your attitude is softening, and that's really good. But just to, it's okay, isn't it, that there's somewhere that you still identify a little bit. Yes, of course, you'd rather that not occur. But it came to a head, and it got resolved, as you saw later on anyway. So the more we can relax, okay, here's an area where I still identify with the mind, with the ego a little, and it hasn't changed the fact that I am the self. It never could change that fact. All it means is that the body may feel quite tense or agitated or diminished in energy and well-being for a while as I experience the effect of picking up that thought. I might experience the reflection also showing me for a little while some friction, some tension. But other than that, I'm not changed. I'm not changed at all. I am what I am. And gradually I'm coming out of identifying here and in all areas. And that's perfect. That's perfect for me. Hopefully it's perfect for you. You're doing the best you can always. And where we are still identifying with thoughts a little bit, it will feel icky. It will feel ew. It will feel very constrictive as you've come out of so much identification already. To suddenly be feeling like you are inside time and space affected by them will really make you kind of feel a sense of diminishment in the body for a while. And that's a good thing, because then you can tell, right, your body's giving you real-time feedback of just how much you're believing that you are a separate being in that moment. And it's never, like the mind says, it is never 100% or zero. It's, okay, I used to believe this thought 100%. This time it's 90%. This next time it comes up, it's 50%. Okay, now I can feel it's about 10%. And you can tell by the way the body feels, can't you? And then at some point you recognize, I haven't really had this thought for a long time, and I don't seem to remember last time I, because it's just gone to 0% at some point and you didn't even notice. So doing wonderful, you're doing great, keep going and give yourself a pat on the back. I always wonder why people say that, because it's really hard to do. You can't actually reach your back, but yeah, I can see Maggie trying to do it right now. It's quite funny. Just relax and enjoy and celebrate your progress. Everything is right on track. And I'm glad I enjoyed the intensive. It was it brings stuff up, doesn't it? Time spent together in that kind of, but it, and as you hopefully have heard from part one, it brought stuff up for pretty much everyone, definitely. So wonderful. Thank you.
Dearest Helen, thank you for your reply last week. It helped a lot. Your teaching is so clear and deep. It has busted so many assumptions. Questioning and looking at thoughts, feelings is extremely powerful. Thoughts about life situations are changing, and there's calmness and peace. However, I haven't socialized properly in a while until last weekend. Although I enjoyed it while I was there, the next day my head was full of noise. I felt jealousy, judgment, comparison, and insecurity about my friends. It has been a downward spiral since then. I'm questioning and asking, are they separate than me? Any other similar ones? And other similar ones, but the emotions and sensations in my body are so intense. I was sort of trying to fit in, not sure whether I should keep a distance going forward or best to use the situation and dig deeper. What gets insecure in me?
Oh, good to hear from you. Thank you for sharing that. It can often be an area where we feel that we lose our equilibrium, we lose our serenity, sort of if we sort of are out and about in a social situation like that. But again, I want to say to you pretty much what I've just said to the previous homework, that here is an area where, and you're doing the work, you're questioning if there are really any other beings. here is an area where you still identify as a separate being to some degree. Okay. And can you accept that's how it is right now? Of course, it's not how you want it to be. but how it is right now? And can you celebrate that maybe you notice this and you're less able to tolerate it than you were when you thought you were a separate being all the time? And maybe it was 96% rather than 100% it would have been before. And as you celebrate and encourage yourself and really notice your progress here, that the reason this is so painful to identify as a separate being anywhere in my life now is because I have shifted so far in my identity, because my seeing is deepening, that anytime, anywhere in my life, I go back into separation, I'm going to feel very constricted, it's going to feel extraordinarily uncomfortable. It's going to feel very much, I just don't want it. So the amount of kind of stuff and the sense of suffering is intense when we do identify as a separate being, because for the most part, you're not now. You're making a real effort to come out of it. You've done some real work around perhaps the area we tend to identify most, which is your children, identifying as a parent. So it's no wonder to me that when when something comes up like this and you do start to believe some thoughts again, that it feels terrible. But that is only because you're doing so well in your awakening. You have felt like a separate being all of your life until you began to really see clearly. And it didn't feel as bad as this. Why? Because it felt true that you were a separate being. The reason now it feels so terrible when it comes up is because you're seeing this is so opposite now to how I normally think and feel about myself and others. So if you can always bring it back to this, this feels terrible, but it's only because I'm doing so well. I wouldn't be suffering identifying as a separate being so much if my identity hadn't shifted so far already, that I literally cannot tolerate feeling confined or limited in any way at all as a someone. And I literally cannot tolerate comparing myself to others now at all, because I've done so much good work. And this goes for everyone in the graduate program. It's not just for this homework, well, everyone in the Sangha and spirituality in general. But why am I feeling so terrible? Is it because I've done something wrong? Or is it because for much of the time, I'm just not being a separate being? I might not notice when I'm not being a separate being, because I'll be peaceful and I won't be suffering. And I really do notice when I am identifying as a separate being, and that's why it feels so icky. So can you turn it around that way and relax a little bit if you can? Be kinder to yourself. You're doing an amazing job. And I feel like that's my mantra this session. Be kinder to yourself. And just to recognize that you, why you feel so bad when this happens. It's not because you're doing something wrong. It's because you've been doing everything right. And it has to kind of feel really uncomfortable when we identify, to kind of keep nudging us to come out of it in every area of life. Your desire has been for a complete and total awakening. And for that to occur, we have to come away from every thought that we're thinking about bit by bit, that we're believing. And here, I think you'll find it's just the comparison, the sense of going back into duality, sense of duality, going back into ego's way. Instead of looking at those beings as, okay, I'm not where, you know, I feel jealous or insecure, which is what the insecurity is. Your question was, is it within us that feels insecure? It's this part of us that compares and analyzes and discerns, discriminates, sorts into two categories, good, bad, wanted, not wanted, a progress or lack of, you know, and on it goes, and is using all of that for reference of how I'm doing in my awakening, and concludes that we're failing because we feel terrible in that moment. What if it's exactly the opposite? What does that mean then? What if I am feeling so terrible because I really cannot stomach being a separate being anymore because I've shifted so very far. I spent my entire life and lifetimes as a separate being. Now I can't tolerate it for even a minute or an hour. And that means that you are going to come out of it fully because you just cannot live there anymore. So hope that helps to kind of give some ways to work around it. Again, you're right on track. I have to keep telling you all that because we listen to our mind. It says totally the opposite. So well done and good to hear from you.
Dear Helen, there is the recognition of just being. Then a sense of frustration appeared, and it was if something was looking for the beingness again. Then there was an immediate recognition that there isn't two, as in the frustration and beingness. Instead, I clearly saw the sense of frustration was a vibration of the beingness, and once seen, it dissolved. The beingness can never go anywhere, nor can anything emerge out of the beingness. Yet one can say that when beingness appears to take another shape, it really is only a different frequency.
Yeah, it's it will always seem like something emerges out of beingness, won't it? And frustration feels and seems and looks like a totally different thing to beingness. They feel very much opposites when we feel them. Any frequency, any vibration feels different to that which is not vibrating. Even bliss feels different to silence, doesn't it? Even joy, even fear, shame. But they are shapes that the shapelessness is making. So if we had water, running water, liquid water, and we froze it into an ice cube, there's really nothing different about that water, except in the ice, it is vibrating slower, a lower frequency. And these emotions are simply lower frequencies that we're feeling within the body. And that's why we don't like them anymore. We prefer the higher ones. And that's, of course, totally okay. We also prefer the place before vibration, which is your real self. And as you begin to see the oneness, what does that really mean? The lesson four teaching is that nothing really arises out of the self or merges back into. Nothing was ever created, sustained, or destroyed, although it always seems to be in the manifestation. When we have physical senses to perceive through, it will always seem like actually an awful lot has arisen out of the self. This entire universe has arisen and eventually will merge back into, and everything is coming and going. But merging out of, merging back into rather, and arising out of are two things. Needs two things, and there's only one. So the universe is an optical illusion. It seems to be, and they're not actually, just like the water in a mirage is not really water. You can't get wet from it. So as we see this clearer and clearer, then we won't so much mind whichever way the manifestation goes, because we'll recognize it's none different than the silence and the stillness, the beingness. Here's beingness looking like frustration. And as I recognize that, it has to kind of instinctively move back into a higher frequency as you experience, doesn't it? So keep going with that. Keep looking deeper and seeing that you are really beginning to recognize the oneness, whether it looks like a table, whether it looks like invisibility, whether it looks like frustration or feels like frustration, it's all the same one essential essence. So lovely. Well done.
I've not been in touch for a few weeks, somehow missing the deadline for homework, but I've still been chipping away at my false beliefs. My question arises from your recent clip in the YouTube, Being Alone, Preference or Necessity. It's the issue of no others. I can begin to see that absolutely everything arises within the field of awareness, And if I can use a thought or feeling as an example, the very fact I'm noticing or aware of these arising means I must be watching from awareness and I'm not them. This awareness must surround everything and everyone. All discordant energies from others are therefore included and to be treated the same as the ones that arise within me. Is this correct? But there still seems a strong distinction between the arising energies in this body, mind, compared to those arising in another. Did you suggest that these energies in others were really mine as well, or just to be treated that way? As I write this, I'm sensing that allowing or forgiving these discordant energies in myself helps me to allow these others, as it's not them. Sorry to ramble on.
That's good to hear from you, and don't worry about missing the deadline. It's absolutely fine. And you're not rambling at all. You're asking some very intelligent questions here. As you've used the example of a thought or an emotion, I notice I'm aware of my thoughts. And I'm aware of this emotion. The first stage we kind of go through in our awakening is I'm not that thought. I'm not that emotion. I'm not my body. Because I can see it, it's not me. But as the deepening seeing begins to really what we're looking at in lesson four, which is really where you've been working for quite some time here, can I really see that thing if it's not me? Can I be aware of a thought without, or can I have a thought without the awareness of it? And as we see, you know, mind says, well, there can be a thought, but nobody sees it. But is that really true? If thoughts are arising out of awareness, then, and I'm addressing this because there's kind of a subtle, there's the questions that you've asked is also a subtle thing that I want to address underneath what you're saying. So as a thought arises out of awareness, seemingly, a steam rises off of the hot water, the thought being the steam and the hot water being the awareness, can you have the steam without the hot water? Are they really different? Can you have the thought without the awareness? If the awareness is there and the thought arises out of it, can they really be different? Again, as I was just saying, beingness and frustration in the previous homework seem very different. Awareness and a thought seem very different, but they're actually not, because you can't have such a thing as a thought or an emotion without something for it to come out of. Therefore, they're not really different. And the analogy in a lot of the scriptures is a gold ring. If I have a gold ring on my finger, is it really a ring or is it gold? And most people would say at this point, it's just gold. There isn't any ring, but really it's both, isn't it? And eventually the word gold and the word ring must become synonyms within your own consciousness. It doesn't matter whether I call it a ring or gold, it is the same. It doesn't matter whether I call it a thought or awareness, it is the same. So applying this to the situation of me and others, energies of other beings that I seem to be affected by, they seem to be different than me, but they're not really. If I am seeing these other beings, like seeming other beings, they must be me. And it doesn't matter in the end which body mind vehicle, which body a particular emotion arises, it's dealt with by the awareness that is you in the exact same way. So when we're in satsang, there's energies coming at me from other beings, not that they're deliberately doing that, for the most part, but it doesn't matter to me. There's no urge to protect this body from the oncoming energies, because there isn't a sense anymore that this body is all I am, that these energies are mine and all these other ones are other. They're not my job to process. I've lost that sense. I just process, transmute whatever energies come at me from any body-mind vehicle. It's just going on without me really sort of paying any attention to that. So as a sense that this is all I am, here is where I am, and everywhere else I am not is disappearing for you, then you'll find that you'll be called upon or asked to sometimes transmute some energy for an other being that needs that help. But it doesn't feel like other when you do that. It's no different. And you won't feel it in such a deep and profound way. There'll just be a sense of something's clearing here, and it'll be quicker and quicker each time. That doesn't mean you've got to go save the planet and transmute everyone's karma, of course, although I tried that for a while, wasn't so successful. Trying to save the planet and all that stuff. But the energies are coming at you, and they're always doing it through the air, through animals that you encounter, through other human beings. Even the plants around you will have energies that they need help with. It's just kind of always ongoing. And you are just the most open, available body-mind vehicle in the vicinity to do that, to transmute it very quickly. That's really all that's occurring. So not treating them as other than you will help you deal with them, and you won't even notice to after a while that that is going on. And even if you do, it won't feel any different than if some fear or something came up inside your own self, for transmuting, for working through back into peace. So there's always going to be energies. Less and less will they be coming from this body-mind vehicle, and more from others around you as you work through your own stuff, so to speak. The reason we don't want to accept this on some level is because ego is looking for that finish line. I'll be awakened when I've worked through all my karmic patterns and my energies that I need to transmute. Until then, I won't be there. So the last thing it wants to do is start taking on energies from others because, oh my gosh, I'm not there yet. I'll never be there. But awakening is never finished in that way, is it? Really? I can't say that my awakening is finished when there are other body-mind vehicles inside me that I still need to release a lot of these heavier energies. I don't have that sense of trying to get to an end point anymore. And maybe that's what you're pointing to in your writing as well, that I can just let them come. But as I'm open and free, I am the space in which they appear. I won't be impacted by those. And that's why an awakened being can sit in a room with 500 beings that are all suffering and be not affected at all in that way. You know, the body may be feeling certain things that it's working through, but that's just happening. And it's not a personal suffering in that way. So you're right on track with what you're saying here. And see if you can have a little more confidence in what you're seeing. That you don't doubt yourself. You really are right on track. And just keep looking at this and it will become even clearer. Definitely. So thank you.
This is the final homework. Dear Helen, just a note to thank you for the satsang intensive. I'm still amazed and surprised at how everything you give us is clear and deeper. How can that be so? But it is. Feeling so blessed to be able to get the clearest, purest, most direct guidance through you. I apply what you share and the fruits are immediate. Testing it against the reference point of what I can prove to be true. There is no guesswork or time involved in what you suggest we apply. The satsang intensives truly are an accelerative booster to this already powerful GP course. Many thanks and much love.
Thank you, and glad you enjoyed the intensive, and very much accelerate. I'm not even going to try and say that word. Accelerate our progress and really do boost it in that way. For anyone that missed it, by the way, the recordings are now on sale in the Sangha shop, and if you go to helenhamilton.org and click on Sangha shop if you want to get those recordings. But it's happening in life anyway, not just in the intensive, isn't it? It's intensifying. And really just to the teacher really is only shortcutting the process for each of us, just to, because it's clearer from the teacher's perspective what thought it is that we're believing. They can point it out quicker. And of course, you would get there on your own, absolutely. But sometimes there is, and I'm not wanting to wait for that to occur organically. So we ask the question, find out, and then we apply. And at some point, the teacher is also inside you anyway. A teacher isn't any different. The real self is the teacher. The noumenon is the teacher, of course. Sometimes it will seem to be external in another body-mind vehicle, but increasingly it's just recognized that it is within us all. We have this innate wisdom inside, and guidance as to what to do with something. And really we're just shortcutting the process really with satsang, aren't we? With the course, the graduate program, intensives, retreats, all of it. We're shortcutting that, working with it, learning to celebrate it more, learning to keep a perspective on how far we've come and what we have achieved and what we really are, rather than where it tends to usually go to. So thank you very much for that feedback, and very, very glad you enjoyed. And I appreciate, as always, all of your feedback and homework, and just want to thank you very much for sending that in. I will see you, if you can make it, on the live session for Saturday for July's graduate program. And we're going to work on, you know, are we there yet? The belief, am I there yet? And just lastly, thank you, Maggie, very much for reading those out. It was much easier for me. Wonderful. So thank you very much. We'll see you soon. Lots of love to you all. Namaste.